We get it underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program the author of a number of tremendous books, including Why We Love Baseball, The Baseball 100, The Secret of Golf, The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini, and his brand new book, Why We Love Football, A History in 100 Moments. We are happy to welcome back Joe Posnanski. Joe, thanks for being with us.
It is great to be back.
Man, oh man, I love this book so much, and you write so well about baseball. I think, well, Joe's primarily a baseball guy, but as you tell us, there's a whole lot more to the story, and I guess maybe we should credit Brian Sipe for this book?
Yeah, this book has to go credit to all those Browns that I grew up with in Cleveland. Yeah, it's really funny because, I mean, I've really spent my entire career writing about everything, you know, all sorts of sports. And but, you know, lately it's been great. Of course, I love baseball and have had some real success with my recent books. And it's funny when I you know, come out with a football book, people are like, oh, we think of you as a baseball guy. And I'm like, that's great to be thought of that way. But certainly football for me was my first, growing up in Cleveland. That was the biggest thing possible was football, and it really was a thrill to write a book like this.
And you learned about yourself, too. Your research uncovered an unknown fact about your own birthday.
Yeah, what a bizarre thing that is. So I was born on January 8th, 1967, and for me, it was the story of my childhood. I was born on the day of the first Super Bowl. I was told that story again and again and again, told how my father was in the waiting room watching football while everybody else was sweating bullets about me being born. He was just casually watching football. And so that was the story I just grew up with. It was like kind of my defining story is that I was born on the day of the first Super Bowl. And it turns out the first Super Bowl was January 15th, 1967. It was exactly 1 week later. So not only was I not born on the day of the Super Bowl, I was born in the bye week before the Super Bowl. And I went to my parents kind of angrily and said, this is ridiculous. There was no football game on TV. And they said, yeah, no, there was. Your father was watching a game. I said, well, there was no game. And I went back, and as you might know, back in the 60s, they used to play a consolation game between the third and fourth place teams that they called the playoff bowl, or as Vince Lombardi called it, a loser's bowl for losers. And that was the day I was born. I was born on the loser's bowl for losers day. So that defines me now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, was it tough for Joe to whittled down to 100 football moments? Was that tougher than your baseball decisions?
It was, and I did not expect that at all, but it really was. And I think the big reason is that this is a football book about college football, pro football, high school football, off the field. Baseball was too. Baseball was about all kinds of baseball, including Japanese baseball and college baseball and so on. But college football and pro football are both such gigantic things themselves. You know, I could have done easily a book of 100 greatest college football moments or 100 greatest pro football moments. So it really was. The first time I was writing this book, I sat down and just wrote a list off the top of my head. I put the computer away and my phone and just said, okay, just write down as many football moments that you can think of. And I was at 250. I just literally off the top of my head. So this one was really hard to narrow down, and fun to narrow it down, but really, really hard.
Well, I just want to touch on a few of them, and some I knew a lot about, a few I knew virtually nothing about, and this one I knew about, but it gave me a whole new appreciation of the chapter on Tim Tebow's promise. And I know Tebow was a polarizing figure, but man, sure. People, I think, forget how incredible he was as a college football player. And the story of what happened after they were beaten by Ole Miss is remarkable.
It really is. It is funny because he has become such a, well, not as much now, but for a time there, he was such a polarizing figure because of the way he, expressed his faith very publicly and also was kind of an unusual pro quarterback. He couldn't really throw. That wasn't really his strength. But as a college football quarterback, I mean, there's a very strong argument to be made he was the best ever in college football. And they lose to Ole Miss, shockingly. They come into the year with with national championship expectations. They lose to Ole Miss early, and Tim Tebow comes in to the press conference afterward. He's virtually in tears, and he promises that that's it. That he's going to do every single thing in their power. They're not going to lose again. That's it. He's going to take this team and they're going to follow him. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, the rest of the year, that particular Florida team is about as good as any we've seen. I mean, they didn't just win. They just destroyed everybody time after time. And Tebow was the hero, and he was the hero all the way through into the bowl game. I mean, he proved the guy. I mean, he said, go follow me. And he just ran the ball down the throats. Yeah, it's one of their most remarkable seasons and one of the coolest stories, I think, in college football history.
I'm a little hesitant to bring one up because I know it's personal, but moment number 88, Red Right 88.
Yeah. Well, it's the defining play of my childhood. And I should say, I mean, the book is called Why We Love Football, and I think one of the reasons we love football is that it heartbreak is bigger than it feels like in just about any other sport. And for me, that was the heartbreaking moment. That was the 1980 Browns. They were the cardiac kids. They came from behind to game after game after game. I was 13 years old. They were the biggest thing in my life. And I was so excited, and they played the Raiders in the playoff game, and they got into position to win the game at the end, just like they had all year long. And then Brian Sipe through the interception on the play, Red Right 88, when his coach, Sam Ratigliano, had said to him before the play, if nobody's open, throw it into Lake Erie. But he always thought somebody was open. I mean, that was part of what made Brian Sipes such a hero of mine, is he always thought somebody was open, always found a way to get the ball through coverage. But not on that play. I threw it to Ozzie Newsome. It was picked off by Mike Davis, and I've never recovered from that.
Well, I balance that with one that's especially painful to me growing up as a Giants fan, and that's the Miracle in the Meadowlands and the unforgettable Joe Pisarcik.
the unforgettable Joe Pisarcik. One thing that I found about that play, so the play is very basically all the Giants had to do was take a knee and win the game, and they decided to try to hand the ball off. Joe Pisarcik hand the ball off to Larry Zonka. In kind of a confusing running play where he had to sort of turn very quickly and hand the ball off very quickly to Zonk. And, of course, they had done it a million times, but not this time. This time he fumbles, and Herman Edwards picked it up and ran it in for a touchdown in one of the most absurd and ridiculous endings in football history. But what I didn't fully appreciate was back then in the late 70s, taking a knee was not an easy thing to do. It wasn't like now where you just take a knee and that's it, the play's over. Somebody had to touch you. Somebody had to hit you before they actually blew the whistle. And there was so guys like, I mean, Pisarcik tried to take a knee and he kind of rolled over to the ground like he was trying to put a fire out or something. It was just very bizarre. And you realize that, it was just a lot different back then. But it still was one of the most painful losses, and I feel for you.
We're talking with Joe Posnanski about his new book, Why We Love Football, A History in 100 Moments. I love the Dan Devine story and what he did to make the movie Rudy a reality.
Yeah, and it's one of the coolest things about doing a book like this is you can write about just things that are, partly a true story. I mean, what you see on the movie Rudy is not entirely true, but there's a true story behind it. And the true story is that Dan Devine is one of the real heroes of the Rudy story. He was the coach that insisted that Rudy get to play in the game, and he was the one that actually was trying very hard during the game to get him in there in a tough spot. And that didn't play for the movie. The movie, and you understand. I mean, I talked to the writer of the movie who's very well featured in it. He talked about, just the structure of movies. He had to have a villain, and he actually went to Dan Devine and said, "Listen, I need a heavy for this story, and will you do it? Will you be my heavy?" And Dan Devine said yes because he loved Rudy so much. So he allowed himself to be the bad guy. But then when he saw the movie, he was like, well, I didn't know they were going to make me that bad guy. I mean, they do. That if you've seen Rudy, Dead Divide does not come across great in the movie, which is really crazy because, as you say, he was one of the real heroes of that story.
I really enjoyed the book, Friday Night Lights, the movie. But like you, I still have not seen the television series. But after reading what you did, now I think I have to follow your lead and go check it out finally.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually had that chapter written by my friend Alan Sepinwall, who's the Rolling Stone television editor and kind of the guru of Friday Night Live.
Alan is a friend of our show. We love having him on.
Yeah, Alan is the best. So I asked Alan to do it. I said I'd never seen the show. But then Alan wrote it, and it's great. It's great. But since he wrote it, my wife Margo and I have watched Friday Night Lights. We binge-watched it. We've seen the whole episode. And now I'm kind of ticked off because I think I would have written a different chapter. Like, I'm not saying his chapter is going to be better than mine, but I wouldn't have written the chapter he wrote. So that just tells you how good Friday Night Lights is. There are a million things you could write about it. It really is a great show.
One of my absolute favorite chapters in Why We Love Baseball involved Bugs Bunny. And one of my favorite chapters in this book is Tecmo Bo.
Yes. Yes. So... you are of, you, I'm sure you did, people of our age, of my age, will remember Tecmo Bowl, the great Nintendo game. And in that game, Bo Jackson was some kind of superhero. I mean, he's, you know, I think Tiger Woods said he's the greatest video game character of all video games, which is kind of funny and probably true. And I really was able to track down... how it happened, how Tecmo Bowl, like why Tecmo Bowl became such a Bo Jackson vehicle. And part of it is the guys who designed it, they were obviously from Japan, they had no idea about football. They didn't know anything about football. They were putting this game together. They kind of had a magazine that they were looking at. They saw some highlights. And my theory is that they saw the Bo Jackson run against Seattle, the 91-yard run where he went around the corner and just kind of kept running, ran into the tunnel at the end. It's one of the most shocking runs, I think, in football history because he's just gone. It's just like he hits the ball and suddenly he just explodes like he's the Flash or something. And I think they saw that. They were like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to have to make him into a superhero. There's no way. There's no other way to sort of reflect what a freak of nature this person is. And he was. I mean, Bo Jackson, the real Bo Jackson, was just an extraordinary player. But the Tecmo Bo Jackson was probably even better.
You were very prescient, as always, Joe. I swear this happened this way. I was reading the chapter, which is fascinating, on the Hail Mary and its history. And right at that moment came up the highlight of Aaron Rodgers throwing another one.
Yeah. No, that's freakish. How good he is at the Hail Mary. I write a lot about this. Like there are multiple Hail Mary chapters in the book. There is the Hail Mary, and then there's other Hail Mary chapters in the book. And I talk about what chaos it is, right? I mean, like if the Hail Mary was a play that worked, people would try it like during the game. I mean, it's just the last desperation thing that you could do. You send everybody down, throw the ball as high as you can, and hope for the best. But somehow... and I think part of it is because of his arm strength. Part of it is because of his timing. I mean, it's like Aaron Rodgers, it's not chaos when he does it. He's the one guy who throws the Hail Mary, and you're like, boy, that would work like 50% of the time. I mean, that's really, and for him to do it again, so that's like the fourth Hail Mary he's completed in the NFL. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
I'm not ashamed to say it. I think the first time I cried something outside of pain was watching Brian's Song. And so it was fascinating to hear the backstory, read the backstory of Brian Piccolo. And yes, while they loved each other, he and Gale Sayers, there was certainly a rivalry, too.
There really was. And it's touched upon in the movie. The movie is so good. It's a television movie, but it's so good. And they do. It's one of those stories, you know, I wrote about multiple sort of fictional accounts of things, or not fictional, but, you know, true to life you know, movies and whatever. And that one is probably as close as you can get to the truth. I mean, it really is. But even in that, because there's only so much you can put in a movie, you don't really get at the heart of how much Brian Piccolo resented being a backup to Gale Sayers. It wasn't, it had nothing to do with I mean, he knew how great Gale Sayers was, but he wanted to play football. That was why he chose the Bears. That's why he, you know, tried, you know, he played as hard as anybody's ever played. I mean, he wanted to start. He wanted to play, and he wanted to be a star. I mean, that was a big, big part of him, and you know, he couldn't do that behind Gale Sayers. So that story is really, to me, it became even more poignant to realize just how hard it was for Brian Piccolo to be behind Gale Sayers, and then for them to, of course, end up rooming together, and Brian Piccolo bringing, helping Gale Sayers, bringing him back from the knee injury, and Gale Sayers, of course, the famous speech just before Brian Piccolo died. It's, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful story, and even more poignant when you realize that there were real men behind this story, and real men with real emotions and real feelings that that were not always positive, if you think about it.
Joe, I like the way you cleverly worked in your ranking of the top 10 players in history.
I did. I sneaked that in. it's, I think it's fairly obvious, but I do. So this originally was going to be a countdown of players. That was the original idea. It was something I had done on my newsletter, and it was going to be like a baseball 100 for football. And then I just thought, no, this... football is about moments. That's just what the game is about. If you, as you think about, you know, what it is that we're always looking for in football, it's the next moment. And you know, you watch a whole game thinking, okay, this could be it. This could be the moment. This could be the pick six that changes the whole game. This could be the block punt that changes the whole game. This could be the, you know, the run that changes the whole game. And so it's always on these moments. And I really wanted to make it about moments, but I had this this top 100 of football players too, and I'm like, well, I need to get something like that in there. So I sneak it in. They're the top 10, you know, 10 players in football history in order, scattered throughout this book. But each of them, I talk about their moment and really try to focus on that as much as I do about the biography of the player.
And some of these great moments that are just etched in your mind as a football fan. All you have to do is mention a name, and you go right to it, whether it's Chuck Bednarik or Garo Yupremian.
Yes, yes. You know, the Yupremian thing is, to me, it was in the Super Bowl during the undefeated season for the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins were beating Washington 14-0 in that Super Bowl to get undefeated. They were actually, he was sent out to kick a field goal. Pretty famously, if he makes that field goal, they win the game 17-0. They were 17-0. Everything about that felt perfect. And instead, what we get is the single funniest play in football history. Just a play that no matter how many times you see it, it's just perfect slapstick comedy. He kicks the ball. It's blocked. He tries to catch it. It bounces up in the air. He tries to throw it, sort of, but it's almost like he bats it in the air. Washington guy intercepts it and returns it for a touchdown. I mean, it is wonderful YouTube, you know, fodder. Just go there and watch that play over and over again because it's so funny. And it's kind of the best way in my mind for that perfect season to end. You know, it really is sort of along the nobody's perfect kind of line that even the undefeated Dolphins had this sort of comical, bizarre thing happen to them.
What a wonderful story in the epilogue about you and Priest Holmes.
Yeah, what a thrill that was for me. You know, I mean, I was in Kansas City as a columnist there, and I got to write about the Chiefs. The Chiefs were, you know, they were up and down. They never, you know, they didn't win a playoff game while I was there. But I saw so many great players while I was there, and one of those was Priest Holmes. And during the stretch of time when he was the best running back in the NFL, he set the NFL record for touchdowns in a season and led the league in rushing and did all of these things. During that stretch of time, for reasons that are too complicated maybe to go into, I would play chess with Priest every week. And it was such an incredible thrill to me to just sort of be able to pick his mind without asking him any questions, just playing chess against him. And he always beat me. so seeing sort of the mental strength of the guy. But just being that close to him, you know, at a time where he was sort of in his absolute prime, was really incredible, and something that just doesn't happen. I mean, certainly doesn't happen anymore, but even then, the opportunity to be able to get that close to an athlete, sort of in the middle of all of it, was really special.
Well, I won't give it away. No spoilers here, but I absolutely love your number one.
What I really want is for people, because this is what I think is going to happen. This is certainly what people have told me already, you know, everywhere I've gone. They've said to me, I first saw what your number one is, and it made me really angry, like really angry. And then I read it, and I thought, okay, no, I get it. And that's what I wanted, because I didn't want it to be that I'm like everybody. I'm sure everybody out there who's a football fan can guess what number one is. And I mean, there are probably two plays, three plays at most that people would put up at number one. And it's not one of those two or three plays. It's something different. And I'll be very interested to see, continue to see how people respond to that.
Well, because it is a moment that reminds us of what's so great about the game and why we keep coming back to it.
Yeah. That was the idea. I mean, for me, every single moment, the goal was I wasn't ranking them based on their importance or based on their dramatic effect or any of that. It really was like, is this a moment that sort of explains what it is, why this game is so, I mean, it's the biggest thing in America, not just sports. It's just single biggest thing in America is football. And trying to explain that, you know, we all know the various issues and problems with football, the violence and this and that and the other, and yet it is deep, deep within the American spirit, and trying to explain that is really a lot of fun.
Why We Love Football, A History in 100 Moments, another wonderful read from Joe Posnanski. I need to make room on the nightstand because Why We Love Baseball is still there. I keep going back to it and read it time and time again. Just a terrific book, Joe, and so great to have a chance to talk with you again here on the show.
Awesome. It's always great to come back, Reg.
Joe Posnanski.